Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of July 26th, 2015. Today we're joined by our co-host, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Good. How are you doing?
Great. Great. So, D.R., it is a warm midsummer day here in Massachusetts, but soon enough, the windy cold of a December in Paris will be upon us. In this coming December, in the city of Paris, France, the Conference of the Parties, the 21st Conference of the Parties, or the COP21, will be held. And if you Google COP21, you will see there's much histrionics around how this is the last chance for humanity to reach a major deal. It is an extremely important meeting. There is an international treaty under negotiation. We've talked about it before. Even now, all countries are expected to publicly say what level of reduction in carbon emissions they will deliver by a certain date, and that will go into the treaty negotiations. So that's all good. It's coming. There's lots going on. And one of the things that is going on in preparation for all this is a guy named Pope Francis. Right? He recently put out something, an encyclical called Laudato Si, which we talked about on this program a few weeks ago. Wonderful encyclical, basically affirming the need for humankind to address climate change. A long way of saying, in preparation for the fact that this past week, the mayor of Boston, along with a bunch of other mayors from around the world and around the United States and around the world, all went to the Vatican to have a meeting with the Pope. At least partially about climate change and also about human trafficking, which the Pope connects to climate change, right? So, D.R., did you see anything about it? Tell me what happened and give me the real story.
Yes, the Boston Globe noted that Boston Mayor Marty Walsh was one of 65 mayors and top representatives from some of the world's biggest cities participating in the meeting, and that a number of these mayors and representatives signed a joint declaration promising to address climate change and human trafficking. And this is seen as a way of sort of generating more momentum going to the Paris climate talks. Obviously, Marty Walsh, as we've discussed before, he inherited a great legacy on this issue from the late Boston Mayor Thomas Menino. And so it'll be very, very interesting to see how outspoken Marty Walsh is, you know, in the weeks and months leading up to the Paris talks. Probably the thing that's gotten the most coverage out of this meeting at the Vatican were some of the remarks by California Governor Jerry Brown, who fervently denounced the climate change denial industry and the merchants of doubt who were behind that industry. And that, and his remarks raised a bit of controversy because as EcoWatch reported, there's a controversy about Governor Jerry Brown's, apparent reluctance to sort of stop the fracking operations in California, despite the fact that the Pope condemned fracking in 2013. And as EcoWatch noted, that there's actually a federal lawsuit that the state of California has been faced with, noting that the state's fracking regulations do not protect the health of Latino children who are disproportionately impacted by fracking. So it's interesting to see, you know, the whole difference between words and deeds, that you have these strong words condemning denialism, strong words supporting the Pope, except when it comes to fracking.
Except when the rubber hits the road, huh?
Exactly.
Well, I thought it was interesting. It was my understanding that the conference, which of course is all of the work of the Pope, right? He says he wants X, Y, Z to happen. That's what happens. The conference was linking human trafficking with climate change, saying that because of the increasing refugee crisis associated with the loss of, well, it's like we were saying before about the ISIS, the drought that was the seedbed in which ISIS grew, also contributes to millions of refugees being moved. And, of course, that ends up, for a significant number of women, in or people in human trafficking, right? Mm-hmm. Is that the take on it that you got from the reports?
Yes, and there was a great piece on this in Think Progress about the conference. In which Think Progress noted, quote, human trafficking is a common risk for immigrants traveling to places like the United States, migrants who are leaving, regions that are impacted by climate change. They are routinely captured and sold into sex slavery by gangs. And this Think Progress goes on to note that studies conducted by NASA and others show that impending droughts in Central America, where denizens already endure some of the harshest effects of human-caused climate change, could create a new dust bowl, forcing thousands to flee and likely expanding the scope of the sex trafficking industry. So Pope Francis has connected the dots, so to speak, people who are concerned about the ravages of the sex trafficking industry ought to be concerned about this issue as well.
Right. It's this, which is a very interesting thing, the linkage of climate change to these real moral offenses happening against the poorest of the world. I mean, it's if we roll this back up to the COP21 that's coming in Paris, I mean, clearly the Pope is on the case. He is setting up things, so he's talking to the 50 biggest mayors about these topics as kind of a prelude to generate momentum to make something, to guarantee that something real happens in Paris in December. So we need to keep our eye on that, right?
Definitely.
But then I read somewhere that the Pope, his popularity ratings have slipped. Did you see that one?
Yes, there was a new Gallup poll showing that Pope Francis's once stellar popularity ratings have indeed gone down dramatically, especially among the more right wing elements of the United States. And a lot of the speculation, of course, is that the Pope's criticism of climate denialism and his criticism of the worship of wealth and the obsession of wealth has not gone over well with some right wing elements of the United States. Exactly. And, this is not a surprise to people who sort of understand the political stratification on this issue in the United States. And it goes to the courage of Pope Francis, frankly, because I'm sure that the Pope knew that there would be elements of the United States that would vehemently reject this message. And yet he went ahead with it anyway. It's already come out that elements of the fossil fuel industry were trying to get him to tone down his message in Laudato Si, and he went ahead with the bold and brave message he did. So,
I think it's amusing to even imagine that. I mean, you can measure the Pope's popularity, but I mean, the Pope wears a white suit, but he's got one major customer who also wears a white suit and a white beard floating around somewhere. The Pope doesn't care what the Gallup poll says, right?
Exactly.
And I think it's you know, is his political clout affected by being less than universally beloved? I don't know. I don't think it matters. I think that his words will have consequence. And so I just think it's an interesting perspective that the Pope gets thrown into this sort of political hurly-burly. And is he up today or is he down today? What's the horse race like? I don't think he cares.
Well, here's the irony. It reminded me of a monologue a while back from Bill Maher, who obviously has been quite critical of the Catholic Church and other religious organizations, where he talked about slogans for his show Real Time with Bill Maher. And one of the slogans that he liked was, "I'm not in it for the likes." And how that phrase could easily apply to Pope Francis. He's not in it for the likes. He's in it for the truth as he sees it and as science sees it. So he's going to stand by that.
So I guess the last point, we're sort of touching on preparation for the Conference of the Parties in Paris come December. I found it quite interesting in the president's last interview with Jon Stewart on The Daily Show, happened earlier this week, I guess. President came out and was being challenged in that sort of not very challenging way that Jon Stewart has about what he's going to be doing for the rest of his tenure as president. And one of the things that Obama said, although he didn't really bang on it very much. He didn't insist, but he's quite clear that doing something about climate is on his agenda, and that the Paris Treaty, I mean, he's fully aware that Paris Treaty is coming, right?
Mm-hmm.
He may, and he's been working on that, goes way back now, because he got the agreement with the Chinese, which allowed both countries to make their commitments under this thing I mentioned before about the everyone making their public commitments, and then has followed on other countries following in style because the U.S. and China have done something. So mm-hmm. I give a lot of credit to Obama there, and we'll see. We'll see what happens. I mean, we're heading into the home stretch here. The Pope is supposed to come speak to the United Nations and to the U.S. Congress sometime in September, right? That's
mm-hmm.
about, 6 weeks away?
We'll definitely.
See. So COP21's coming. Let's switch gears a little bit and talk about Massachusetts politics. About 2 months ago now, the new governor of Massachusetts, his name is Charlie Baker, did what most incoming governors do, which is to make an executive order saying that we're going to look at all those regulations and streamline them and make them even better than they were before. All right, that last guy, the last governor screwed it all up. We're going to get it right this time. We're going to review the regulations. Unfortunately, what the new governor did was to put out a highly biased kind of call. We're basically looking for ways to cut regulations and to make sure that no Massachusetts regulations exceeded federal standards, which, of course, would then make Massachusetts the equivalent of West Virginia in terms of environmental work. This past week, a coalition of environmental groups sent the governor a letter with some suggestions about how to go through this review process. So keep in mind, what we're talking about here is environmental and all kinds of regulations. Of course, here we're mostly concerned with environmental regulations, but the labor regulations, all sorts of regulations that the state of Massachusetts makes to interpret and enforce the laws. And there's a process by which those are accepted, are created, reviewed, and accepted. And this letter put up some suggestions. So, DR, let me ask you, did you get a chance to look at any of at that letter? Did you have any comment on it, or should I go through the talking points that I wanted to make on it?
Not only did I have a chance to read the letter and loved it, I wish I'd been able to sign it myself, because it sort of reflects a lot of my own thinking that, you know, when you have this sort of rhetoric about how damaging regulations allegedly are, this letter makes the point that weakening or removing regulations will have perhaps a damaging effect in its own right. And the key point of the letter is when it's noted that, quote, most regulations by definition adversely affect someone in exchange for benefiting society overall, and many statutes as enacted by the legislature were specifically designed and intended to exceed minimum federal regulations, unquote. In other words, regarding these matters, they were intended to be the gold standard.
Mm-hmm.
And with this executive order, it appears that there's an attempt to sort of weaken that standard down to bronze.
Right.
And that's
right.
Something that doesn't make any kind of logical sense at all. Doesn't make any economic sense. Doesn't make any environmental sense. And this is why this letter is almost like Laudato Si Junior, if you will, in terms of its strength and in terms of pushing back against this sort of a harebrained effort to try to weaken regulations.
Well, I think that what the other parts of the letter, I agree with you, what they said about how there's regulations are a double-edged sword there. But what they're trying to do is to improve the process by which the regulations are reviewed and to make it more transparent. So what they start off by saying was that each agency that's reviewing its own regulations, of course they all have to do that now, should invite in a wide range of stakeholders. That would, for example, in the environmental circumstances, it would be the environmental groups to participate in that process and provide some kind of regular feedback, not just sort of a one-time chance to talk, but to be partners in the process of reviewing the existing regulations. Then it turns out that the governor has now has also written in this sort of they're trying to rig the game in their own favor, right? And so they want to have an in-depth examination of some limited number of regulations, and this letter asked that those that in-depth review be announced beforehand so that everyone gets to play along. We don't find out after the fact what's been reviewed. The letter asked that all comments to the all agencies on these things be made public, basically in real time, so nothing is hidden away, and we all get to know who's asking for what and doing what. And finally, they said that, just as you said, that the solicitation of comments be balanced. That is to say that we're not just easing regulations. We have to review and see what harm the easing of regulations might do and balance that out. So I think the Executive Order 562 Coalition has done a good thing. Congratulate them. We're going to keep an eye on that. I know many of our listeners have expressed concern that this executive order has been promulgated, and believe me, there are people trying to make sure that does not result in any harm to the environmental standings of Massachusetts, right?
And at the very least, hopefully the lesson can be learned by the administration that you don't write executive orders that resemble World Net Daily op-eds, basically, because the language was so loaded and so partisan and so you know nonsensical that it's like you know we have higher standards than the Heritage Foundation around here, put it that way.
Yes, WorldNet Daily. I have to admit, I don't go there very often, but maybe I ought to go once in a while for a laugh.
Oh, no, please don't.
Don't stay away. Okay, yes. I'll take your word for it. You read it for me and tell me what I should not read.
Okay.
So I guess the last thing, I just have to mention it because I like this stuff so much. In the past week has come a report that scientists using the Kepler Space Telescope have been able to locate a planet which is almost a twin to planet Earth, right? The sun is about, the star that it revolves around is about 10%, is a little bit bigger than our star, but the planet is a little bit farther away. The planet is about 50, 60% more massive than Earth, but it's still in the right range where it gets about as much solar light as we get energy, basically energy that drives things. So it's very conceivable that life could have evolved there, which is a fascinating idea. The planet is 1,400 light years away, so even traveling at the speed of light as a radio signal might, it's going to take more than a millennia to get there. So we don't really have any hope of visiting this place. But it does bring home the rarity. We have to say the rarity now, and not uniqueness, but the rarity of planet Earth. It's like, okay, if we burn all our fossil fuel here, we'll all get in a rocket ship and fly 1,400 light years to planet Kepler 45XB or something and live there. No. We just knowing that there's this other twin planet 1,400 light years away should make us value our own little rock that much more. So I would encourage people to think on the literally cosmic consequences and implications of a planet that is pretty much like Earth floating around out there. A long, long way away, but in our galaxy.
Exactly. It's and the LA Times notes that humans won't be able to visit Kepler 452b anytime soon. Well, it goes back to what Senator Ed Markey always notes, that we don't really have a planet B. Right. There may be a Kepler 452b, but we don't necessarily have a planet B.
Yes. So we're not going anywhere.
Exactly.
Anyway, DR, we'll let our listeners know that they can catch up with the links to most of what we talked about on our blog. It's massclimateaction.wordpress.com. Please leave us a comment. You can catch us on Stitcher. You can catch us on iTunes. You can see us on Facebook. So all those ways of getting in touch with us. And let me tell you that we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. Thank you very much, DR. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks.
We'll talk to you again next week. And to everyone out there listening, thanks so much. We'll talk to you again very soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.